Well, it's the conference room with Mark Esco on this Sunday morning. I heard the other day that it's all downhill from here weather-wise. Whoa, I mean, wait a minute. Don't let's not talk about that. We have 4 weeks left. It's in the meteorological summertime, which means technically as of September 1st, although the really summer goes until September 21st. In the meteorological summer or the calendar, it actually ends September 1st. We don't want to think that way, do we? So give me all the hot days that we can have. I'm going to enjoy each and every single moment. But anyway, welcome back to the conference room with Mark Hensley. Again, we have a very special show lined up for you this morning and this afternoon. But again, I just want to make it very clear as we talk about this chaos and managing it. Before I jump into that, my two very special guests, keep in mind, people, the election is Tuesday. You have a primary this Tuesday, all right, across the state of Michigan and beyond. You can pick up your local newspaper, you can pick up the Free Press if you're not sure what the races are, but educate yourself. Make sure you educate yourself in advance. Don't vote blindly. Educate yourself, okay? So it's important that you do that. It's important that you vote. I thought President Obama just said it. He stated very well the other day. He just stated very well when he talked about Congressman Lewis. And a lot of the young people, the younger people who maybe were not around, back in the 60s, you got a chance to relive his life. And you saw him getting beat up. You saw him wearing his famous coat, his jacket, his rain gear, his trench coat. Thank you, Mark. His trench coat. You saw him with his backpack. I guess he just knew that he was going to go to jail. He had an apple, a toothbrush, and a couple of other toiletry items. He also told us that he thought he was going to die that day. And listen to that question. That's his talk. He thought that he was going to die that day. But yet, he didn't. In the 1965, the Voting Rights Act was passed by Lyndon B. Johnson, who was from the old Confederate South. I want you to think about that for a second. Think about that. Don't tell me that I don't have time to vote. Don't tell me that my vote doesn't make a difference. Don't tell me that there's a candidate out there I can't support. Don't tell me any of that. Tell me that you're going to vote. That's all I want to hear. That's what we all want to hear. And that's the most powerful tool that you have, the most powerful nonviolent tool that you have in your arsenal is the right to vote. So if you say, I don't have time, if you say to yourself, I don't want to, issues don't affect me, you need to look into the mirror. You need to look into the mirror and evaluate yourself. Because people, again, have died. Women could not vote for a long time. And remember, the suffrage was passed. African Americans could not vote for a long time. It was subsequently passed. See, and you think about those two segments of the population, women and African-Americans, for the longest time could not vote in this country. How can you say it doesn't affect me? How can you say it's not important to you? Think about that. How many of you just think about this? See, we don't think about it in that context. So if you think about it in that proper context, it puts it in a proper light. All right, what we're going to do is a segue into managing this crisis. I have two very special guests from Psych Absence out of Birmingham, Michigan, also New York, the Big Apple. I'd like to welcome Dr. Paula Kleiger and also Lori Blumenstein-Bott. Good morning, Paula Kleiger and Lori Bott. How are you? Thanks for joining me.
So glad to be with you today, Mark.
So glad to have you. And Lori, are you ready to hear us?
Very excited. Ready to rock.
You ready to rock and roll, huh? Time to rock and roll. So, we've been talking about over the last several months. And let me just clarify, psychologists are out of Birmingham, Michigan, and also out of New York. And then we've been having some very thoughtful conversations on the first Sunday as we're going through this whole pandemic. And as we were preparing for this conversation today, the three of us had a very heartfelt conversation about this thing called crisis and chaos. And I kind of share with both of you, Paula and Lori, about the heartfelt conversations that I've had with my kids. And my kids are adults as we're going through these challenges and these changes. What I want to do, Dr. Kleiger, is turn it over to you and talk about this concept of chaos how do you manage this chaos with everything that's going on, social movement, the COVID-19, we got an election on the horizon, people are feeling exhausted, heard my opening comments. I'm going to turn over to you for a few moments. Take over.
You know, I guess what I'd like to do, as I always do, is to start with something to just for us to contemplate on and kind of bring us into this moment so we can talk even more poignantly about it. In the past, I've used a piece from my book, but this time, and we may have done it earlier, I want to bring in John Lewis because I think he helps us frame this really well. So here are some of his words, and then we can dive into this topic of what chaos really means inside our hearts and minds and how we can work with it. So John Lewis said, his final words were, "Though I may not be here with you, I urge you to answer the highest calling of your heart and stand up for what you truly believe. In my life, I've done all I can to demonstrate that the way of peace, the way of love and nonviolence, is the more excellent way. Now it is your turn to let freedom ring." When historians pick up their pens to write the story of the 21st century, let them say that it was your generation who laid down the heavy burden of hate at last, and that peace finally triumphed over violence, aggression, and war. So I say to you, walk with the wind, brothers and sisters, and let the spirit of peace and the power of everlasting love be your guide.
I mean, you know, he was very prophetic. Rory, what would you like to add to that about Congressman Lewis and his thoughts, his final column that he wrote today that was read at his funeral?
Well, I think the significant loss that we're all feeling is something that we have to amplify. And he, with those words, is a call to action to all of us that we have to embrace. And that even though we've got this chaos around us and all these variables that we cannot control, the one thing we can control is ourselves and how we step in to our life and the lives of people around us. And that his words resonate with me in that way so deeply.
Go ahead, Dr. Quagler, please.
So one of the things that you were talking about earlier that I fits with what Lori is saying and what John Lewis is saying, sometimes we think of ourselves as powerless. And we might think the vote doesn't work or matter. We don't matter. But the notion of mattering starts with us. And that we can be instrumental each and every day by starting with ourselves, which, you know, fits with, of course, the model that we promote every single time we talk together, the self-study model. And young people, I think, are saying they're coming together and they're knowing as a collective they have a voice. But when they're not together, like your kids, our kids, it's so important for them to tune into that notion that, you know what, in my own way, I count. I have power. And mm-hmm. I can make a difference. So just wanted to go to that space first to begin to talk about why there's chaos and what we can do about it.
You mentioned a minute ago, I don't want to lose this because you spent a lot of time before we stepped in talking about the upcoming voting and how important mm-hmm. that is. And, you know, you gave the sort of no excuses. You know, this is one of those John Lewis obligations, if you want to own it that way. But you can get there. You can make this count. And the only way to have your voice, even in this kind of a world, is to step into that. Voting is the critical piece.
It is a critical piece, but yet we're living, you know, in this moment of this climate. Based on silos and based on divisiveness and people, you know, what frustrates me is the closed-mindedness of people. And I think as I watch the news and have conversations with Dr. Quagler and Lori as well, and other people, many people I talk to throughout the course of the week, I'm perplexed by that. I just don't understand. Maybe I'm Pollyanna. How many people open their minds and really listen to the other side? Because I think what I've noticed in all my years on this face of the earth, this seems to be the most, the device of this has always been, let's just cut to the chase. But it seems to be much more pronounced now and much more closed-mindedness. I mean, how do we start to open people's minds to get them to see the other side?
So one of the things that we have learned through the various kinds of work we do across the board, organizations, couples, groups of all kinds, is that people who are different from each other have to come together. It's kind of like they have to be pulled together. At first, they're going to feel uncomfortable. They're going to come into the room with their dukes up. But what we have learned is when we get people sitting together and talking about something that has to do with all human life, something begins to open up, Mark. Those barriers, so that sense of I'm different from you or I believe this versus somebody else, those begin to relax. Now, that is a place we have not gone to consistently. Mm-hmm. Those moments when we bring people together, we expose ourselves to others. And I think we live in our little silos. You know, we go to our own churches. We go to our own work. We have our little pods. And now with the pandemic, in a way, it kind of emphasizes us continuing to do that. But what Lori and I work on teaching and working on in our work every day is actually bringing people who have different viewpoints together to sit with that uncomfortable feeling. I'm sure, you know, Lori can jump in here, too, to kind of talk about some of the latest stuff that we're doing around bringing cultures together.
Go ahead, Lori.
Well, I think that one of the things that Dr. Klager is hitting on, and you hit on it, too, is that even though there's a groundlessness that we're kind of existing within, that kind of our anxiety tends to spur and get larger, there are ways for us to be with each other and to spend time and to connect. And we've talked about that, you know, through some of the shows that we've done in the past. But I think what Dr. Klager is leading us to is that when you are with others, that any time those are opportunities, and how you use that opportunity is so important. But you have to be ready to do it. And so when we talk about that, that's checking in with you first. What are you bringing in? What are you not bringing in? Are you opening up something so that you can connect to others? Because, again, let's go back to John Lewis. Connecting is the key.
Yeah.
So, again,
go ahead, Buck. Go ahead. I mean, you guys are doing a good job. I have so many thoughts going through my brain right now.
Chaos is, you know, we're all sort of excited right now because the chaos is something that we, the three of us, talked about a lot. And you even brought up schools, which is a whole nother, you know, kind of facet of chaos that's coming in. And every day we have a new school that's, you know, are they going online? Are they closing? And then we've got the ripple for the parents and how are they going to manage and how are they going to educate and how are they going to work? And there's so much there, but we have to sort of, you know, take it slow, see what we can do, don't panic. Those are the keys to, you know, unraveling some of this.
We have, we have callers. We have people watching this show from across the Detroit, across the country. David from San Francisco, thank you for calling into the conference room. Very patient. David, what are you thinking?
Oh, well, thanks. Morning from San Francisco. Yeah, I was spurred to call when I heard you talking about voting in the post office. And, there are a lot of stories going on around right now about how Trump is trying to shut down the post office, to bog it down. So I'm glad there was discussion about, you know, personal delivery of it. But I was just wondering if anybody has any knowledge of whether the local postmaster, you know, you could do a GoFundMe page or something like that to make sure that guy has got enough money to be able to staff the post office up through Tuesday. Maybe you can tie it with your radio station real quick or something. But the other thing, with your guest was talking about the COVID and the need to have unity. united we stand to beat this this epidemic. Don't underestimate whether or not there are actually saboteurs. There are people who are invested in these, in making sure it goes south. I keep reminding people that we've got three cabinet officials. There's Betsy DeVos that wants to bankrupt the school districts so they can sell all the school district land. Every, city and county in America has got prime real estate, and if they bankrupt the school districts with lawsuits in COVID or just normal bankruptcy from her mismanagement, all that real estate goes up. You got Secretary of the Treasury Mnuchin, who is the guy that owned who ended up with the most deeds when the subprime scandal cheated 40 million people out of their homes 12, 13 years ago. And then Secretary of Commerce Wilbur Ross, he's known as the king of bankruptcies. So he takes a disaster, makes it worse, so he can come in and like a vulture and buy everything up at 2 cents on the dollar. And then, of course, Trump himself got most of his Trump Towers through redevelopment agencies declaring an area blighted. And if you know much about, how awful people like Robert Moses was in New York or Justin Herman out here in San Francisco, where they declared, black areas of town blighted, kicked everybody out, and then, parceled out their land to their real estate buddies. That's how Trump got his fortune. So,
let me jump in. I want to ask you a question, David. I want to ask this question. I have two psychologists on the line. And I want to engage them. I want to ask you, you're in San Francisco. There's a lot of chaos in California right now. There's a lot of chaos in San Francisco. How are you managing the chaos? I want to give Dr. Kleiger and Lori a chance to listen to you. How are you managing all this chaos? And you've done a nice job of recapturing all the issues we've been talking about for the last several months. But from your perspective, how are you managing this chaos? Because I want to give Dr. Kleiger and Lori a chance to address you specifically.
Well, first of all, there is no chaos. If you're talking about the protests, I was at one, two, 3 days ago, very calm, very orderly.
I'm talking about the overall chaos in life. Everybody's going through a lot of change right now between the social movement, between the pandemic. You're not working. You're working from home. I mean, that's uprooted a lot of things. That's what I'm getting at. How are you How are you feeling?
Well, if you know about the science of this epidemic, this is actually a very fragile virus, and if everybody in the entire country, starting right this minute, settled down for about 3 weeks straight, just stayed at home, the whole thing would be over in a month. But we keep ending up with sections of the country. You saw it first in Michigan with those.
Dave, you're not answering my question. My question, we know that. We've heard about the mandates of wearing masks and things like that. I'm asking you personally. How are you managing the chaos? Are you comfortable? Are you happy? Are you anxiety feel? That's what I'm getting at with my question.
Well, me personally, I slow and steady wins the race. That's the way I've always looked at it. I've studied disasters and fallen overboard in the ocean, and I've studied adventure stories for years. And slow and steady, keep your wits about you, and you're going to come out healthy.
All right, David, thank you very much for the call. I'm going to give Dr. Kleiger and Lori a chance to respond.
Stay safe, everybody.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. David, some really good stuff that you shared with us. And I think one of the powerful things that you are bringing up in a very indirect way is you study things. You clearly are listening. You're reading. You are studying the facts. And you are informing yourself every single day. And you're informing yourself, it sounds like, across many resources. This is something we need to encourage everyone to do. Even if we have different ideas about things, the more that we really know and we go and we find the right resources, the more knowledge we'll have, the better able we will be to go towards safety, to go towards facts and science, and to go toward our survival. The second important thing that you're talking about is, there are all these people who may be saboteurs, but that's why what Mark was talking about earlier, we got to vote. I mean, we have to come together around the knowledge that we have and stand together as a collective and say, no more. It's not as if it's done. We must move in a direction that is hopeful and that means survival. One more quick point, and then I'm going to turn it over to my colleague. It can be really hard to feel like we can step up and speak. Day to day, we hear all kinds of stuff. People who make all kinds of insults, we let them go. I think this is a time when we can gently say things like, ouch. We don't even have to insult somebody directly. We can say, ouch. Someone can get the idea that was not the right thing to say in front of me, at least. So those are some of the things. Knowledge, voting, finding your own individual way to speak up and stand up. So, Lori, I know I went on there, but I'm sure you've got some stuff you really want to add to this.
Well, I want to take us back to Mark and the question that you asked our last caller, which is what we want everybody to kind of focus on, is how are you managing the chaos? And we don't want to just ask the question to all of you out there. We also want to impart some things that we think are going to be helpful to you. And part of that is we talk about grounding a lot in our lives. You know, how do you create grounding in your life when everything feels so chaotic around you? And that has to happen especially for families and individuals. And you've got to have a routine. You've got to establish a routine to your life, because that gives you that comfort that helps you to manage what feels unmanageable. And the more you're able to establish those rituals for yourself, the routines, simple things, then you're better able to exist in the chaos.
You know, Lori, and I'm going to come back to you on this question, Lori. I know we got callers, so please hang tight. But let's talk about it. You made a comment, you know, people working separately. You know, we're using technology as we're speaking. We're on the phone. And during this pandemic, how do we come together socially in these challenging times? Let me be a little bit more specific. Recently, the governor laid out some data here in Michigan this past week that suggested of all the cases, 31 to 32% of the cases were in the nursing homes. I better go down that path. That's not the point. Just hear me out for a second. 31 to 32% of all the cases are nursing home related. But number two, 22% of the cases are direct result of social gatherings. So there's this thing called socializing. So how do people start to socialize during this to deal with the whole mental component of really wanting to be around people and enjoyment? Give us your thoughts here, Lori.
Well, I think, again, you're hitting where all of us are sort of feeling the loss, and that's that deep social connection to each other. And there are safe ways that we can do this. Obviously, technology is one of them. But at the end of the day, we're human beings, and we're used to that, you know, face-to-face sort of contact. So what are the safe ways we can do that? And we know that we can put on a mask, that we can stay 6 feet apart, that we can create a gathering outside most of the time, other than today we're having a miserable deluge, but we usually have, you know, opportunities now more than ever, and maximizing those opportunities. I've even had it where people, you know, want to get together and have a picnic, but they bring their own picnic because you can't share the food. You know, there's so many things that we can do. We are amazing people. We have so much creativity and talent. Turning that on now more than ever is the key.
Rick, you're very patient. Go ahead, Dr.
I was going to mention one more solution. Mm-hmm. When Lori spoke of the fact that we are creative, there's a pediatrician who was seeing a youngster in the hospital, and the parent, I believe, came up with an idea of how to make the pediatricians that are seeing children more accessible. And so he and the company developed a mask. It's called the clear mask, so that the doctors could wear a clear mask, and therefore kids could see the smile on the faces of the doctors. This is an invention, one of many that we can begin to use ourselves to make it possible to bridge that gap, but do the same thing when we are trying to come together.
Phone lines are lighting up, so I'm going to ask my callers to keep your comments relatively brief, please. Rick, you've been very patient. 19 and a superstation. Thanks for calling into the conference room from Detroit. Rick, what are you thinking?
Hey, as I'm listening, and you know, you have your guest on pretty regular, and I'm in agreement with where they are and what they found. I would just add this, though. I'm thinking, let's consider moving from the outreaching individual as compared to the positional teacher, right? Now, what you're saying is absolutely correct. The fact of the matter is, though, that there's no mutual agreement with people who need the information to receive the information, right? And part of finding them is having a harness that receives their claims related to that. People who would even, I would guess, admit to needing the conversation, who would admit to wanting to work together, who would admit to wanting self-improvement even, right? And so I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, I'm seeing this common thread again. Should we stop believing that we can solve the problems of others without that mutual agreement to have those claims? Can we actually bring 100 smart people into a room and they have a great conversation? It become tape, stream on YouTube, and whatever it means to go viral. There's no implication that really works. Now, I mean, you can sum it up in a lot of different ways, but we have no implication that has impacted ratios, numbers, or anything along that line that any self-respecting data scientist would dare try to step on, right? So my piece would be that we need to kind of change that. And I wanted to tie that into real quick to the part you talked about Black business. One of our struggles with Black business is, you know, how do they add value and contribute to our collective? I mean, it seems as though we want to support them because of a figurative, imaginative opportunity it may create for maybe ourselves or our children. But that's not in writing, and there's nothing that structures that. And, you know, when you talked about John Lewis, I think the reason that Clinton brought up, you know, Stokely Carmichael slightly in that is because at that time, that was the comparison. And I think that now that we do look, you know, you can't, you know, Stokely is forever in history because what he spoke about institutional and corporational racism and what it would do and how it would lead to no power, even with the vote. And we look now and we look at the crisis that we're in, the subline issues. We see that he definitely had a message. And I think it's your caller mentioned something good in finale, special pickup of ballots by a postal worker would be a great thing. May3.com. Thanks, Mike.
All right, Rick, thank you very much. I appreciate you calling. As Rick calls it each and every single week at Royal Rooster. Dr. Quagga or Lori, would you like to respond?
You know, it seems to me that there's both callers are bringing up the level of complexity that is we are facing. And that level of complexity and concerns and problems from pandemic to social unrest lead to chaos in our minds. And chaos is outside, but then we internalize it. I think what I want to kind of come back to and bring together is not, it is about the individual and what we can do, but at the same time, we are a communal self. And in that context, internally, it is important for us to begin to think of how our own behaviors affect others. We are not all alone. We are not separate beings. And just taking care of ourselves is not enough individually. Or even just taking care of our little family system is not enough. It is time for us to begin to recognize that our own survival is dependent on the survival of the other person, the other human being out there, that other human being that we may disagree with. And that is the power of a John Lewis. John Lewis is saying something, I think, very different than many Americans are saying. John Lewis is saying, Black lives matter. Human life matters. That was what he was fighting for, and that is what Martin Luther King was fighting for, that it is when we think of not just our own personal survival, but the survival of others alongside of us. That is when we are using ourselves in the most, the best, excellent way, as he points out. But all the things, this chaos cannot be touched until we recognize it from within, and that it has to do with our fears, it has to do with a fear of the other, and beginning to recognize if we can bring that down, relax that a bit, we'll begin to see, you know what, the other person across the room is maybe different than me, but it's their survival that matters just as much as mine does.
Well, the phone lines are lit. I'm going to ask my callers to make it clear. I'm running up against the clock. The phone lines are lit up. John, thanks for being very patient. 19 in the Superstation. What do you think, John?
Yeah. Well, thank you. I can't really remember your name. But anyway, the young lady just spoke. She spoke eloquently and exactly right. And I totally agree with her 100%. I won't say 1,000, but 100%, because that's exactly the way he was speaking of, and with Dr. K is speaking. But number one, with self and interpretation about what we have to do for yourself and so forth, and your right and your civil obedience about what you have to do for your own your neighborhood and yourself. But I just want to ask her that. Speak loud and clear about people's got to vote. They just got to vote. So you got this clown up there in the White House now. He's trying everything in the world to keep people from voting. So you got to beat that like a drum, man. And let the people know they got to vote. They must vote and so forth. And don't ever deter not voting and so forth. Because they vote do count. Some of them, I don't know, I'm not vote count. But that's a doggone line. They both do count. And so I want you to keep pushing them to know that they got to go. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks, Dr. Kreider. And well, I want you guys to hang on for a little bit longer. I got to take a quick break. I got another caller. And I'll keep you on for another couple of minutes and have another guest. But what we're going to do is take a quick break. Dr. Kreider and Lori Blumenstein, by we tell on a hot topic, phone lines have lit up. They're going to hang around for another minute after the break. So we'll be right back on 910 AM, the Superstation. You are in the conference room with Mark S. Lee.
You are in the conference room with Mark F. Lee in Motor City. You may be watching across the Detroit, across the country, across the globe. Now, good afternoon to you. We have a very thoughtful and heartfelt conversation. You're going to be segueing in a moment about Detroit teachers or whether or not they're going to be going back to the classrooms this fall. That conversation will be taking place in a couple of minutes. We're wrapping up with Dr. Paula Kreiger and Lori Blumenstein-Bott from Psych Assets in Birmingham, Michigan, two psychologists, and also the Big Apple of New York. And a very thoughtful conversation with all the chaos that's happening around us. Thomas, you've been very patient on 1980 Superstation in the conference room. I'm going to ask you if you could to keep your comments relatively brief. Thomas, thanks for joining us. What are you thinking?
Okay. Fear is greater than this pandemic. And the entities that created this fear factor, they have used tests to promote this fear. You know, if you test, you can test all people for all kind of stuff, and they may be positive and nothing will happen to them. But they pushing this testing, we got these cases. So I'm saying that the world is not going to ever be the same again, because whoever is starting this mess has created a fear so deep that people, the majority of them, will not participate in things as they were. This is going to result in universities closing, schools, all kind of businesses. The people have been convinced. They're so scared, you know, and they're kind of simple, too. You know, people die every day. We all have to die. But my bottom line is, whoever created this madness have successfully done it, and the world has changed. People are not going to be willing to participate before. They don't want to gather. They're not going to do anything. They're just going to sit in the mothball and deteriorate or whatever. It's a sad world. But
hey, Thomas.
Yes. Independently, I think we can do our thing and be happy, but it's a mess. Peace.
Thank you, Thomas. We appreciate the call. Dr. Kweiger and Lord Lumisimbad, I'll give you 30 seconds for final comments.
So I think that the caller really hits, a very important point. Fear is a part of all of our lives now. And how do we move forward with the existence of the fear or the unknown? But that is can't get in the way of our lives forever, because we have drive, we have ambitions, we have motivation. And that passion in us can be the powerful change to pull us forward even within this environment. We need more dialogue, more deliberation. We need that passion in all of our lives. And I think this show is indicative of that. So thank you, Mark, for pulling this together.
Well,
I would just want to add to what Lori is saying is that the fear is something that we don't have to talk about or go with fear. We can focus on the things that we do that bring gratitude, joy, happiness to our lives and spread that. Just because someone or people tend to promote fear, that doesn't mean we have to buy it. We don't have to buy it. It's called, what are we all in about? Let's be all in about our survival and our transformation and our growth. We don't have to go with fear. Shut it down. Move away from it. Find like-minded people like you and make life even better. So listen to our podcast, too, because I think what Lori and I do in our podcast is a follow-up on what we do with Mark Lee. And we love you, Mark Lee. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much. I really want Dr. Kweiger and Lori Blumenstein-Bach. Thank you very much, and I appreciate it. And we're going to continue the conversation as well. You know that's right. All right. Have a great day. Thank you both.
Thank you.
All right. Very thoughtful conversation. I see a lot of emotion and conversation. I want to thank Psych Assets for their support of what they're doing. There's some great things in the community. And speaking of the community, we're going to segue into a very important conversation as well. You know, we know that the fall is right around the corner, and that means school. And a lot of questions about what's going to happen in the fall. So I'm so pleased to welcome for a supportive conversation, Mr. Terrence Martin,